Y'all, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Pat Bradley, basketball analyst for the SEC Network, will join us in 30 minutes. A couple of midweek losses for Vanderbilt and the Vols. What does that mean for their status moving forward as we get closer to March? We'll break all of that down with Pat Bradley in 30 minutes. But we've been talking all this entire offseason, we've been talking a big part of the day about where the Titans go from here at quarterback. You know, you could say, I think it's the best move for the Titans to just stick with Ryan Tannehill. I think that is the most feasible option. In my opinion, I think that's the most likely option that the Titans are going to go with in 2023. But there's no clear path about where the Titans go from here. You could either invest a lot of draft picks to move up. You could invest a lot of picks and money into a veteran quarterback, into upgrading, like, say, an Aaron Rodgers. Or you can stick with Tannehill, but I think we all know that if you hold on with Tannehill, you're not going to be bad enough to be, you know, one of the top picks in the draft in 2024 to get a Drake May, to get a Caleb Williams. And it's so early right now to put all of this stock into a quarterback that still has a full season of college football left to play. So what's the plan? What's the plan for the Titans at quarterback?
First of all, just to tie up the loose end, the one that I was thinking of is Passenger 57.
Yes.
Is
there
Wesley,
we go.
This Wesley Snipes movie where the plane is hijacked and he had at least the line I remember, always bet on black. It cracked me up. It was your basic action early 90s film and one of a gazillion fun movies that Wesley Snipes has made. So anyway, to close the book on that.
I always appreciate whenever we all are trying to think of the name of something or what year something was or something, if we're stuck on something, we always get a flood of texts in the text line giving us the answer, and I always appreciate
that. And some of them are, and so I'm just looking at, this was 1992, was Passenger 57, right after White Men Can't Jump, which is another great movie from the, he went on a great run. If you look at Wesley Snipes, you just look at all the movies he's been in, pretty strong, one after another.
Yes, absolutely. So I heard Robbie and Joe talking this morning about the Athletic Football Show. They have a podcast, and they were talking about the Athletic's football show's kind of timeline or off-season plan for the Titans. So Robbie and Joe were talking about it. I thought, okay, cool, interesting. I'll give it a listen. And so this was the Athletic's plan at quarterback for the Titans. I have some thoughts on it, and I know that you all will too. So this was on the Athletic Football Show in terms of what the Titans should do at the quarterback position.
Let's say they move on from Tannehill. They free up another $18 million in space, which that would be a post-June 1st cut or trade. Yeah. Or pre-June 1st cut or trade. Then you're at like $45 million in cap space. Okay? So then I think the question becomes, if you move on from Ryan Tannehill, what does the quarterback solution look like in 2023? And this, again, I think brings us to a larger question. If you are in transition, you are not competitive, you don't think that you're a competitive team, you have not a ton of urgency to be competitive, you have a head coach who clearly has a lot of built-up equity within the building.
And that's very important. So great point. Yes.
Ton of equity in the building. You have a GM who is in his first year. I don't think there's going to be a ton of pressure. You have to win right now. We just saw them cut a bunch of veterans to save some money. What do you do at quarterback with the 11th overall pick?
I'm not taking one in this class. See if you have anything with Malik Willis. And I think it's a win-win. If he flashes, if you play that second half of the year, it's a, we're trying to stay competitive and see what he's got. Wink, wink. You know, like you kind of get a nice kind of double whammy there. So I think that is the path that
by the way,
I see for
exactly
them.
What the Falcons did this year.
Yes. That's exactly,
what the Falcons' plan was, even if their quarterback was in year one instead of year two.
But same thing. Same thought process. That is a great call. And that's exactly, I think, what they should go down, the path that they should go down.
Okay. First of all, the first thing that they mentioned was if you're not competitive, if you don't think you're going to be a competitive team, and you don't have the urgency to be competitive, don't think that's where the Titans are. I think the Titans want to be competitive. Mm-hmm. I think the Titans feel a sense of urgency to be competitive. They have an aging elite running back in Derrick Henry, and I don't think they plan on wasting the rest of his career on just, you know, throwing up their hands in the 2023 season and saying, oh, we'll just plan for the future. I understand the thought process that it would be really easy to just, you know, to dump Ryan Tannehill and go with Josh Dobbs or Malik Willis and just be bad. The Titans don't have any interest in that. And I don't think the Titans have any interest of seeing what they have in Malik Willis. I think they've seen what they have in Malik Willis, and that is that he is not a starting quarterback in the National Football League.
No, I don't. When I'm listening to things like this, I got to remember they are talking from a national perspective.
Right.
They're not
outsiders.
Yeah, they're not talking from, you know, I can see if this was Joe Rexroad saying this. It'd be a little bit different because Joe was here.
I'd say, Joe, what are you smoking?
Yeah, I would say that too. But it coming from Joe, would it be a little bit different because he's here, he follows the team, you know, everything else. So coming from Joe is a little bit different. Coming from a guys that got to cover not just this team, but everybody else's team, but they're only covering this team because of, you know, this whole thing with quarterbacks now, you know, moving from one place to another, and it all started last year. So now it's become a big thing. If you know, if you followed Mike Vrabel since he's been here, I don't think that he's, like, signing up for a season in which he can't be competitive. Does it make sense to me to look at Mike Vrabel and him saying, okay, I'm going to agree to this, to not be competitive this year in hopes, it's not even a guarantee,
yeah,
in hopes of getting a Caleb Williams or, you know, one of these other quarterbacks that may come down, like Drake May, guys like that. That's hoping we lose enough to get those picks. You would have to clear this team, period. Derrick Henry, Jeffrey Simmons, Kevin Byard. You have to clear this completely.
And you're still probably not alone in wanting to go get a Caleb Williams.
Absolutely.
In 2024.
So that, if this was any other franchise, I would probably say, okay, I get it. But being here, knowing what we know, knowing how hard this team has fought through their injuries and everything else, to now sit back and say, you know what? We want to not be competitive. We want to try to get Caleb Williams or Drake May. I can't see Mike Vrabel signing up for that. Hell, I can't see Rand Carthon signing up for that. Now, if it happens where they end up having a losing season, then okay, you know, but going into the season, I can't picture, you know, Mike Vrabel getting up there and having to explain, well, this is a rebuild because of all the moves that have been made. I just can't wrap my head around that. You can't convince me that this team will purposely put themselves in a position where they're going to lose this season.
That's just not this team's DNA.
Exactly. There's nothing 100% but depth and taxes, but this is almost, I would believe this is almost 100% that Vrabel wouldn't travel down that road.
And to the point that the head coach has enough equity in the building. He definitely has gotten a lot more equity since John Robinson got fired, mm-hmm. but I think Amy Adams Strunk has shown nobody is safe. I thought John Robinson had enough equity in that building to not get fired in the middle of the season. And look what happened.
Well, yeah. First of all, it makes me wonder if they've watched a whole lot of the games in detail that Malik Willis played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he had not played at all this year, if Ryan Tannehill had played all of the games and they had still fallen short, I can see that logic. But you've seen a lot of Malik Willis. I think you have at least some idea of where he is, and there's a long way to go. There's got to be a lot of work behind the scenes before you would enter in on a plan on that, unless, like, you, and they sort of mentioned this, you'd be tanking, basically, You're basically saying you're putting Malik Willis in to sink or swim in the deep end without a life raft, right? It's basically, all right, Malik, if you make it, great. Congratulations, you'll pull a miracle. Otherwise, you're going to fail, and we'll have a high pick, and we can get our next guy. I see that, but you guys are right on. I don't think Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthon want to go down that road. The only thing that gives me pause is, like we talked about when this came up, if somebody just blows you away with a Herschel Walker-esque kind of package for Ryan Tannehill, which I don't think will be the case, that's the only thing that would have me considering trading Ryan Tannehill. Otherwise, we're just going to find a million ways to end up saying the same thing, because we love football and we talk football throughout the offseason, even though nothing really happens most days, is that Ryan Tannehill is the best option for quarterback next year.
Yeah, like Jason Light of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers saying that he believes in Kyle Trask is basically saying, hey, you know, we're waving the white flag. Mm-hmm. If the Tennessee Titans say Malik Willis is our starting quarterback in 2023, that is the Tennessee Titans waving the white flag. And I don't think that's an interest that the Titans have. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. I see your phones. We'll get into those next. Plus, in the Athletic podcast, they say that the Titans need to see what they have in Malik Willis. Do they? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game.
The big question, obviously, becomes what you do with Ryan Tannehill and his $36 million cap hit, and what that says about where you are, where you want to go, and what you think the best path forward is.
That's because if you look at the rest of the quarterbacks on the roster, they did draft Malik Willis as well, but they pulled the plug on that experiment. They plugged it back in and pulled it several times in 2022.
They blew in the cartridge and then they tried to have it work again and it did not work. So yeah,
they tried
to toss that one.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see with that path. But the Tannehill stuff is super interesting, because to me, this team is prime for the tank word. it really is, or at least a 1 year kind of, all right, take a deep breath and really go for 2024. This next year's quarterback class, I know everyone says this, I just want to start with this. Next year's quarterback class, there is going to be some tanking. I do think it happened. Competitive tanking with Caleb Williams and Drake May. I really do think those are two prized prospects. Right now, a lot of things could change. But does Tannehill make you too competitive? because he is a fine quarterback, and if you just have some semblance, but he can get you to 6, 7, 8 wins. So that is where, okay, do you really just point the nose south, or do you try and move on from this and really just nuke it and really clean slate it?
There you go. That was the Athletic Football Show, and I don't think that that's what this team wants to do. I can understand from the outside looking in, looking at the number of holes that this Titans team has, looking at some aging assets, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, and saying, hey, just start over. This team does not want to do that. They also mentioned that the Titans need to see what they have in Malik Willis. And I ask, why? Like, the Packers need to see what they have in Jordan Love. Mm-hmm. That was their first-round draft pick, and they're going to get to a crossroads with his contract if they don't see what they have this year. Are they going to extend him and pay him a big contract, even if they don't even know if he's that good? Or are they going to move on from him, their first-round pick in 2020, not even knowing what they have in him? Like, the Packers do need to see what they have in Jordan Love. For the Titans, you know, the Malik Willis was a third-round pick. They saw a little bit of Malik Willis this past year. Like, do they really need to see what they have in Malik Willis? Like, how much time do they really need to dedicate to developing Malik Willis? And how much game time do they really deserve to give Malik Willis when he was a third round pick? I don't think they need to see what they have in him. I don't see that at all.
I mean,
I understand the sentiment, but
they, I think what happens, what's going to happen, they do need to see the progress. They need to see, you know, adding Charles London, who's the new quarterback's coach. I'm sure, you know, one of his first tasks is to, you know, okay, evaluate Malik Willis. And what are the things that you think as a quarterback coach he needs to get better at, and how can you facilitate that as a quarterback's coach? So they want to see if now Charles London can come in and get and make Malik better, Malik Willis better than what he was last year. If he shows that he's getting better through preseason and everything else before that, then, you know, it will be determined whether he's on this roster or not. Because you got to understand, Rand Carthon didn't draft him, you know. So I don't think it would be a huge thing if, you know, he doesn't show any progress to Rand Carthon. Say, hey, listen, we just got to move on, you know, and allow you to possibly get with another team. But if they see some progress in him, then yeah, you keep him in hopes that, you know, he become, you know, more anything. If he becomes a backup, if he can become your backup quarterback, if not your starter, you know, from what we've seen, it's going to take a lot for him to become a starter. Not saying it can't happen, but he's going to have to work a lot, not just this offseason, but off seasons moving forward. But what he can show you is that he can be your backup quarterback. He has, he's done what needs to be done, that he's prepared himself, that you can put him in the game if your starter goes down.
Could you sell this? Let's say you're Rand Carthon. You just got hired, and you say, look, I'm the new guy here. I'm looking at our cap. I'm looking at all the positions that we need to address. It's a long list. Here's our cap. We don't have a lot of money. I'm getting some calls on Ryan Tannehill. Could you sell, if you thought it was your best, and I'm not saying this is what Rand Carthon is going to do, and like we were just talking, you got Mike Vrabel. He's a competitor, right? This would be a last resort. But if you made an honest assessment of the roster and said, I don't like our ability to compete right now with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and Joe Burrow, and you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars right now are in a window. It looks like they're going to be pretty good. I'm not sure we can hang with them right now. So what if we took a step back to take the step forward? Let's try Malik Willis for a year. Let's clear the decks and see what we have. And that is going to be the quickest way back to a championship-level roster. And, oh, by the way, we have a new stadium that's going to open up in 2026. Could you sell that to Amy Adams? Could you sell that to the fan base? I'm not saying that that's what I would do because it's a painful thing. But you do have fans that propose that, right? They'd like to see you blow it up and start over. I just think sometimes you don't know. It's a really risky thing.
I think that you could totally sell the fan base on that because I think some fans are already calling for it. Mm-hmm. And it would hurt. And there would be no guarantee that you could get out of that hole. I don't think you could sell Mike Vrabel on it.
It has to be because, you know, it's all collaborative. Everything that happens is a collaborative effort to make sure this team is in the best position to win, not a collaborative effort to make sure this team is in the best position to lose this season. They want to win this season and win moving forward. So, yeah, it has to be – everybody has to be in agreement. And honestly, I can't – and it might happen. I don't know. But I can't see Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel – agreeing to purposely tank for Caleb Williams or Drake May, because those are the two top guys. And if you look at it, what is the difference? Honestly, what is the difference between those two top guys and the two top guys in this year's class? What I can say about the two top guys in this year's class, one of them has won a national championship and a Heisman Trophy. And the other one has been damn good in C.J. Stroud, you know? So whether you get – if you're going to move up, well, move up this year while you're at 11 to get one of those two guys, because it's not – there's nothing saying that whatever you do is going to put you in a position to get Caleb Williams or Drake May.
And every other team in the NFL that doesn't have a quarterback is probably looking at Drake May and Caleb Williams and saying, what can we do to get our hands on that guy? Let's get your thoughts on it. Mike is on the line. What's up, Mike?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey.
Derek, I think that was you that was just talking, but I 100% agree with that. That's what I was going to say. I hate the whole tanking idea. I think that's terrible. But if you see your guy, you know, as a new GM, and I know, I don't know if he wants to play it safe or whatever, but if you go to the draft or you go to the scouting and you see your guy, you're like, this guy right here is our guy. You're at pick 11, make some moves, make a trade package, move up, grab your freaking guy. Just do it. Be bold. Go and get him and just make it happen. Even if you have to sacrifice some picks, I would rather that than them saying, you know what? We're just going to tank. We're going to waste another year of Derrick Henry. which if they did that, I'm sure Derek wouldn't be happy about that. But just go get your guy. Be bold and get him in the draft. If you see him, you like him, you want him, go get him. That's what I think. That's all I got.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Mike. And I would agree that if you find that guy that you know for certain is going to be your franchise quarterback, you know, for years to come, then you do everything it takes to go out and get him.
The key words being for certain. Is there such a thing?
But again, everybody.
It's easy to say that. I mean, everybody would agree with that statement that he's making out there. Go get your guy. We know. But it's a very complicated question.
But
it's
then everybody, all these, you know, these experts and so-called experts, they all raved last year about Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, how, man, I can't wait to next year's draft. These two individuals are coming out. Man, teams are going to want to get their hands on them. And they had a great season, college season. And now all of a sudden we're looking at these quarterbacks and said, oh, well, let's wait to next year. What happened? Seriously, I'm trying to figure this out. What has happened that has made these two guys undesirable? Whereas before the season – they were sought, like, we need to get these guys. And they go through the season, and they have great season. And all of a sudden, it's, well, there's a question about this guy. He's too small. He's this. It's like, are we going to go through? Because it's not like Caleb Williams and Drake May or Peyton Manning.
I think it's kind of natural. Like, I feel like it happens every year. Remember last year, Kenny Pickett was like the hot commodity, mm-hmm. and then it came out that he had small hands, and then mm-hmm. all of a sudden nobody wanted to touch Kenny Pickett. I feel like there's stuff that comes out every year about every quarterback, too small, run.
But that was, we knew how big Bryce Young was last year.
Yeah.
Before the draft. We knew how tall he was and how 100, 200 pounds. We knew that. We knew how big and how much C.J. Stroud weighed last year mm-hmm. before the draft. We knew all this before the season. And they came out and they proved that they were the best two quarterbacks in college football, basically. Or two of the best three with Caleb Williams, or two of the best four with Caleb Williams and Drake May.
And I do think that part of it isn't necessarily, looking past Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, even though there has been, there has been a lot of talk of, oh, Bryce Young's great, but. Or, oh, C.J. Stroud is great, but. I think it's a lot of hype coming from teams that know they're not going to get those quarterbacks. That maybe are drafting, middle of the first round, late first round, like the Bucks, for example. Like, they're not going to be in the place to draft a quarterback this year, but can look ahead to next year. Even the Titans, they might be in a point where they say, we just aren't willing to give up what it takes to draft a quarterback in this year's draft at the top of the draft. But if one falls to us, great. Or if we can get one next year, that's kind of the thinking. If they just can't get the quarterback this year. Pat Bradley of the SEC Network, basketball analyst for SEC Network, will join us coming up next. We'll get to that coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, the game. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, the game, and the Game Nashville app. Joining us, basketball analyst for SEC Network, Pat Bradley. Pat, we appreciate you for joining the show. I want to start with the Tennessee Vols, because this team is so fascinating to me. They can beat three top teams in the country, Alabama, Texas, and Kansas, and then they turn around and get on a kind of a kooky losing streak, two back-to-back buzzer beaters. They lose to teams they really shouldn't be losing to. I just can't quite put my finger on exactly what this Tennessee team is. They've got the talent, but sometimes kind of fall in games and lose games they shouldn't.
Yeah, they do, and their offense has been inconsistent. We know that. I do think with Julian Phillips and Josiah Jordan-James, those two guys being out, I think it hurts the flow of their offense. Those two guys, not only, at 6'9", Phillips can attack, he can finish at the rim. But I think JoJo James is more of a point guard mentality type of guy. He moves the ball, he facilitates, he understands player movement, and he helps that offense. So Tennessee is always going to defend, going to be tough. The challenge is, can they score consistently? So I think when those guys are healthy, it's going to help them because they're two of the better offensive-minded guys in offensive awareness. So, yeah, to your point, it is. It's the SEC is a defensive league this year. Alabama's the they may be the best offensive team in the country with all what they have, but overall, the SEC is a defensive league, so that's why you're going to have those type of games where you make shots, yeah, okay, you're going to roll, but you don't, then it's going to be that grinded out type of game that we've seen Tennessee in a few times this year.
Looking at what the SEC, we're talking with Pat Bradley, SEC Sports, looking at what the SEC in their schedule and in the teams they have ranked, I think at this point, and I think I saw a bracket, you know, bracketologies saying they could potentially get six or seven teams in.
Eight
teams.
Keep going. It just means
nine teams. So
hey,
look at
you're an SEC country, man. You're gonna be talking about 10.
No, but I'm talking about
Vandy could go on a run, get us nine.
And that was going to be my question. With these teams and looking at a team like Vandy and them winning five straight, but then end up dropping a horrible one against LSU, albeit it was at LSU. Where does that put Vandy in regards to them potentially making the tournament?
Yeah, that was a tough one. Your back's against the wall. You're LSU. You dang near have a 14 game losing streak. I mean, you can come out and fight, Vandy's got a team that's fighting for their pride, their life, you know. So, I would say, you know, February midweek game in February, albeit it was Mardi Gras and it was nice, you know, and it was nice out. Weather was nice in Baton Rouge. So, but that's a tough game. And you got a kid in LSU, KJ Williams, mm-hmm. that in the non-conference was playing. He was playing like an SEC Player of the Year contender, this kid. So that one, yeah. That sort of now they were under consideration going into that game. You win that game, you start building more and more, and then you hope somebody loses that's on the bubble from another conference. But, now you got to run the table. And, I mean, I hate to say you probably got to go out there and win the SEC tournament.
Now, do you
– it's home. So
yeah,
you can do it.
It's possible. Looking at Texas A&M, they are a game behind Alabama. We consider Alabama the best team in the SEC. They got the best player, I believe, in the SEC, albeit there are things surrounding that team as well as him. But I do believe Alabama is the best team. But how close is Texas A&M to Alabama in regards to the play on the court?
Well, let's be clear. There's not many teams in the country that's mm-hmm. close to Alabama on the court, okay?
Absolutely.
So, I guess, you know, the important thing is there's a showdown, Texas A&M, Alabama, last game of the season. So you tell me Alabama has their full basketball roster, I'm rolling with Bama. Of course, nobody knows what's going to shake out. We know they get a full roster now. But so Texas A&M is a great defensive team. From an offensive standpoint, they're extremely efficient. They don't make many mistakes, take good shots, get good shots, patient. That's really what they've done. They've taken care of the basketball, don't turn it over a lot. So, you know, it's a simple game. I mean, you get good shots. Over the course of the 40 minutes of a game, you're gonna end up winning a bunch of them. And so I think Texas A&M and what they've been able to do this year is phenomenal. I mean, outside of Nate Oates, Buzz Williams – is, you know, those two guys, SEC Coach of the Year. Of course, I got to throw in my man Dennis Gates at Missouri, what he's doing too. Mm-hmm. But those three guys have done some phenomenal things this year.
We're talking to Pat Bradley, the shooter from the SEC Network. And, Pat, you mentioned a couple of things there. Let's look at the SEC tournament as a whole, because after Alabama, now that Tennessee has sunk back a little bit, you can really see a pretty wide open team. There's so many good teams. There's very few teams that bring nothing to the table at all. You just saw South Carolina take Alabama to overtime. LSU beats Vanderbilt, for example. If those are the worst teams, you see that they're still capable of knocking somebody off. It's going to be a very entertaining week in Nashville.
Yeah, it is, and I know, hold on to your hats, Nick Smith Jr. is back for the Hogs. This kid is a top five NBA pick for a reason, and he is about as energetic and creative scorer as we have in the entire league. So throw Arkansas in there, Tennessee in there, A&M, Bama, Kentucky. They may have figured it out. You know, you got a team like Vandy, who is desperate. They're going to be playing for their tournament life. So it's going to be one of the more entertaining tournaments we've had in a while. And, you know, with all that, you still don't know who's going to be the top four seeds, who's going to play Thursday. I think Mississippi State right now, are they still a tournament team? But I think, are they still in the last four on Wednesday? I got to check my updated standing. So
yeah, they are right now 6-9. So they are, yeah, they're one slot, but they're tied for that last spot with Georgia. They're both 6-9.
So think about that. That's a tournament team. You know, maybe playing on a Wednesday. That's how competitive things are going to be in Nashville.
Well,
By the way, were you guys in Nashville?
We are, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And Pat, well, let me throw this at you. Oh yeah.
Well, actually, I
work for the Predators. So when the tournament's in Nashville, that means the Predators are all over the country. They are not in Nashville. What's that?
You guys throw octopus on the ice?
Catfish. We do catfish. It's the Red Wings do the octopus.
Oh, yeah. Catfish.
So if somebody throws one on the court, you'll know that that somebody went to the wrong game or something like that. But let me throw this out. You mentioned Mississippi State, Pat, and Vanderbilt fans. Of course, I played at Vanderbilt back in the day, so I'm looking at this with a close eye. The net ranking, right? For years and years, when you played, it was all about the RPI, right? That has been sort of deemed outdated. Now we have this thing called the net, but they still keep the RPI. Vanderbilt has a better RPI than Mississippi State, but it's almost a reverse in the net. So Vanderbilt's way back there in the net. But I could make the case that Vanderbilt and Mississippi State have very similar resumes, even after the loss that Vanderbilt just had. And, of course, Vanderbilt plays Mississippi State at home in the regular season finale. So it's interesting to me that Mississippi State is still considered right there to try to get in, right. And Vanderbilt is now so far off. It just shows you there's not that much difference between all these teams.
No, there isn't. And I think what hurt Vandy was the bad losses. You know, they had a couple in the non-conference that obviously you wish you could get back. And
sure.
And I think that's probably the biggest thing, because, you know, they were playing as good basketball as anybody, and I think Vandy can go to, for instance, Kentucky and win. There's no doubt in my mind. So they're as good as anybody. And Liam Robbins, I mean, he just playing as good as anybody in the country, in the United States, of college basketball. That's how good this guy is. I saw him on Tuesday. I mean, the kid blocks like 8 shots. Affects so much part of the game. Shoots, not even like I would, like everybody wants to talk about, oh, his big man can shoot, when a big man can shoot. I'm like you, played back in the day. I want my big man to block shots, rebound, and if you can shoot, that's great. But we got a lot of little guys who can shoot too. We need some big guys that can block shots and rebound. And he still does that in Liam Robbins. That's why he's first team all SEC.
Now, Pat, before we get you out of here, is there anything to this rumor of Coach Cal potentially going to Texas?
I can't see Cal at Texas. You think he? You think he's going to Texas? That's a football school, man. Come on. Come on.
Don't tell the basketball players that.
No, but I don't listen, Cal has the number one recruiting class coming in next year. Mm-hmm. And not only that, he's got some dogs coming in. I mean, they're the type of players like De'Aaron Fox, attack you, break you down, get to the rim, finish. It happens, man. Sometimes you recruit guys and they don't pan out. Sometimes you get transfers and they aren't, you know, they don't fit the way you thought they would fit. So, but Kentucky still is good this year, man. They still got great length. They don't get overwhelming talent. They only got one NBA. I think Oscar Tshiebwe is second rounder, but the kid Cason Wallace is the first rounder. So they don't get that overwhelming talent they normally do. But he's got it coming next year now. Big Blue Nation, you don't like the word patience. I know Big Blue Nation doesn't like patience.
Patience isn't in their vocabulary. Let's just say
no.
That.
And then, listen, they're spoiled. They don't have to be patient. I mean, that program's rolling. They don't have to be patient, man, the way they support it. But they're going to get it together. I wouldn't be surprised if they go on a run, maybe get to the Sweet 16 this year. They've got the bodies for it, not the overwhelming talent, but they certainly got the size, athleticism, and that kind of thing to make a run.
Pat Bradley is with us, SEC Network. Last one for you, Pat. Jeff Goodman put out that Kermit Davis is out at Ole Miss, but also said one potential candidate to fill that job is former LSU coach Will Wade. I would be shocked. I mean, am I wrong in thinking that, if Will Wade ever gets another job in college basketball?
Well, the guy wins. The guy wins. And, you know, he's not I spent time with the guy, and he's not, you know, he's a very focused, driven, and that turns, you know, and maybe he could be a little rough around the edges when dealing with people. And of course, I'll put it to you this way. So all that stuff that with the FBI investigation and all that, right? Is that why people are not happy with him? Would that be?
Yeah, it's the looming NCAA violations at LSU.
The guy in Arizona, Sean Miller, okay? He also was caught up in all that stuff. He's coaching right now at Xavier, his old school. And nobody says anything about him. So I think, honestly, I think Will Wade is just maybe, like I said, he's just rough around the edges, so people are easy to attack him. But he didn't do anything that any of the other coaches that were caught up in all that stuff did. I mean, I think, if I'm not mistaken, reading through the text messages of all that stuff, I think Kansas was caught up in it. Oklahoma State was caught up in it. There was a lot of other than Will Wade. And Will Wade, listen, he's a good basketball coach.
And the rules were different. The rules are different now, right? I mean, that's part of it, too.
Right, yeah. I mean, good point. Now it's everything that was alleged is legal now, but they
yeah,
always
do it, right?
I mean, we know. Yeah, I mean, listen, we know what happens. I think that just there are certain personalities that people like and don't like, and it's easy to attack somebody if you don't like their personality, to be quite frank with you. There's nice guys who, well, there's a lot of coaches that get away with a lot of things because of how they handle themselves.
And for the record, I love Will Wade. I love his personality. But I'm just looking at it from, you know, I went to LSU, so obviously I love Will Wade. But from the outside looking in, I didn't know kind of the temperature on Will Wade on the rest of the college basketball world. But Pat Bradley, SEC Network, appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you soon.
All right, appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Coming up next, we'll break down some of what Pat Bradley had to say, some of our thoughts on the Vols and Vandy basketball. Get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We just had Pat Bradley, SEC Network on. I think one thing that stood out to me, D-Mace, when you were breaking down just how many SEC teams could potentially become tournament teams, and you look at Alabama, one of the best offensive teams in the country, Tennessee, one of the best defensive teams in the country, Texas A&M, that's just a good team, a very well-coached team, thinking about how crucial the SEC tournament is going to be, and also how entertaining the SEC tournament is going to be. I mean, this is a competitive league, and the tournament is going to have big impact on a lot of these teams in the seeding, and even who could get in and who could get out.
Yeah, it does. I think Alabama, if Alabama wins, Alabama doesn't have to win the SEC championship.
No, they're in.
I think they are, if they can win two games within the tournament, they are a lock to be a number one. I believe, because frankly, they are one of the top four teams in the country, regardless of what they do in the SEC championship. I think for teams like Kentucky, the Vols, even Auburn, who's reeling a little bit, they won the other night, but they didn't look too good in previous games. Missouri, he spoke of Missouri. I think for those teams, the tournament is going to be valuable. Even Vanderbilt, because Vanderbilt right now, and Willie, you brought it up, Vanderbilt is on the outside looking in, and they are on the far outside looking in, so they have to win. You know, had they not had that bad loss against LSU, I said last week that they had to win at least, I believe if they win two games within the tournament, then that probably gets them in. But now, because of that bad loss, anything short of being in a championship game, I can't see Vandy getting in unless they just win the remainder of their games and it's in a fashion where they're just blowing teams out, and then you get in a tournament, you win a few games there. But short of that, they got to get into the championship game, I believe, to even have a shot.
They're going to need a big tournament. Definitely going to need a big SEC tournament for sure. Now, I do think it's an overreaction to say they have to win the tournament, because if you take a look at what they've got, I mean, I there's no question that was a very costly loss the other night against LSU. But if they turn around, and this is a big if they beat Florida this on tomorrow, right? And Florida's a good team, but they're missing their big man. Vanderbilt has got to recover and win that game. But if then they turn around and win at Rupp and then beat a Mississippi State bubble team and finish 11-7 in the SEC, I do think that, you know, I don't think people are going to say they have no chance unless they win the SEC tournament. And a lot of it also is dependent on what happens around the country. Does the bubble shrink a little bit? Does the bubble grow a little bit? Does it flatten out? There's a lot of variables here. So I think it's an overstatement. Like a lot of people have said, well, that knocks them out unless they win the SEC tournament. I don't think that's an absolute. You win at Rupp, because Kentucky's playing very well right now. That would be a big, big feather in your cap. So that's one thing to keep your eye on. I also am really curious about what Alabama looks like as they navigate this whole firestorm that's going on down there. It was a fascinating game the other night. Brandon Miller scores 41. The day that all of this stuff comes out and all of his lawyer is speaking, the college is standing up for him, there's all kinds of controversy. You still have to see where the trial goes and things like that. They've got national championship kind of stuff, but can they work their way through all of the stuff going on? That is going to be a major, major story when those teams come to Nashville in a couple of weeks. Wow.
And it is true. I think that Brandon Miller almost used that as like fuel to the fire in the most, you know, negative way possible, but positive for him. But I look at it with Alabama, I mean, how is it really affecting them inside the locker room? Because we are all talking about Alabama basketball in a very negative light, and we're all talking about Nate Oates and Brandon Miller in a very negative light, very rightfully so. But from what we've seen on the, you know, the biggest scandal of all of this on that day, go out and you beat South Carolina in a very close game and Brandon Miller balls out. So I do wonder, you know, is it even a topic of conversation in that locker room?
I think it becomes one once you get outside of the SEC, once you get into tournament play, March Madness. Now you're playing at neutral sites where these are not your fans.
Yeah.
And you heard what was being said at the game this past the other day about him.
Yep.
Lock him up and all that. Just think how much worse it's going to be when you go to a neutral site.
It's going to be brutal. Mm-hmm. That is going to do it for us today. Have a great weekend, everybody. Adam Vingan and Chase McCabe in for Jared Stillman coming up next. We'll be back on Monday at 11 a.m.
Peace.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.